Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Talk Radio Breakfast with Mike Graham. In for Julia Hartley Brewer and The Times. Know your Times.
Good morning. It's Thursday, the 20th of February. You're listening to Breakfast with Mike Graham, standing in for Julia Hartley Brewer right here on Talk Radio. Coming up, Tony Blair will give a speech later saying that Labour could be out of government for a decade unless it adopts new radical politics. Up next, I'll speak to former Labour MEP Claude Moraes. Also, Harry and Meghan will formally step down as senior royals from the 31st of March. They will no longer carry out duties on behalf of the Queen, but arrangements will be reviewed after 12 months. And in the next 15 minutes, I'll speak to Prince Harry's former royal butler and a Republican who wants to abolish the monarchy. I've already had one tweet from somebody saying, surely they'll just add an E to royal and make it Sussex Royale. Something like Pulp Fiction. And the head of Ofcom says a £14 billion boost in education spending risks being squandered by poorly managed schools. Plus, heavy rains continue to fall on flood-hit communities in England and Wales. Around 1,400 homes and businesses have been affected by Storm Dennis. I'll give you weather updates throughout the show. It's coming up to 5 minutes past seven. This is Talk Radio.
Talk Radio Breakfast with Mike Graham. In for Julia Hartley Brewer and The Times. Be well informed.
We've been talking already this morning about some of the big stories on the front pages of the papers, including Ofsted worrying that schools are going to squander around about £14 billion worth of education cash, which is going to be given to them in the budget, which is indeed happening in March, as we expected that it would with a new Chancellor. We've also been talking to some extent about the Tony Blair speech, which is coming up at 9.30. I'm in the company this morning, Michael Walker from Navarra Media, Andy Sylvester from City AM. Let's talk now to Claude Moraes, former Labour Party MEP. Claude, a very good morning to you. Welcome.
Good morning.
Now, there are some people in the Labour Party who will say, why are we still listening to Tony Blair? What is the point of it?
Well, I mean, you know, this thing about renewal and reform, I mean, there's nothing new about asking for that. I mean, we're just in the middle of a leadership debate. We're going to have a new leader. I don't actually see what the news is in this. I really don't. And, you know, we're going to have a new leader in April. They're going to have some kind of reform agenda. I don't see what the big deal is. I really don't. And
Are you saying you shouldn't be listening to him then?
Well, I mean, I just don't see what the big deal is in a former leader of the Labour Party calling for renewal. I just don't see what the issue is.
Well, he's not former leader, is he? There's a sort of collective miasma going on in the Labour Party where nobody wants to mention Tony Blair's name, as we saw from the Channel 4 debate the other night when all three contenders were asked who their favourite politician leader of the Labour Party was in the last 50 years, and not one of them mentioned him.
That's clear, and it's to do with issues like Iraq. It's to do with the history of the party, and that's what's going on there. But the issue is, if he's calling for it, and he's every right to. I mean, former leaders have done it. Gordon Brown has intervened in this debate. I don't see any surprise in it. There's a lot of other things going on. I mean, I'm not really sure why this in particular is a big deal. I really don't. If Keir Starmer, for example, wins, he's already spoken about ensuring that we look carefully at why we lost, what we have to do to win. And it's been a long journey. I mean, that is just so obvious.
Isn't it about time they actually moved on from why they lost, though, and actually worked out what to do to win, rather than keeping on this kind of rather self-flagellating exercise of how terrible it all went?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm a member of the party. I just want to see us be a really good opposition. I mean, just take the immigration reforms yesterday. I mean, it's our duty to tell the British public, you know, what is going on, whether they're being conned or not, and, you know, what the government is doing, what they're doing wrong, and get on with proposing something a bit better. That is going to be a very tough prospect. I mean, this is a government which, as you could see yesterday from the, for example, the immigration proposals, is moving in a kind of, sort of slightly populist way. I mean, it was all sort of tabloid fodder, the immigration reforms. I mean, even people on their side are saying that the immigration, so-called immigration point system, it doesn't quite make sense. It's going to end up having so many exemptions as to be, you know, really pretty much null and void. I mean, just take one example. They're talking about solving the social care crisis. Johnson is talking about that. And everything about these reforms indicates that we wouldn't have the people to do it. Now,
but it's very easy, isn't it, Claude, for people to sit on the sidelines and have a go at something that is being proposed, where the Labour Party is simply having debates about who should be the next leader. Surely what they should be doing is putting up a very strong opposition to whatever the government's proposing and saying, we would do this. And that's precisely what they're not doing. I mean, you're in danger of turning into the Lib Dems, where you just go, well, if we ever get into power, we'll do something. But until we do, we'll just waffle on about what the others are doing wrong.
Precisely. We've got to be a decent and proper opposition. That's the point. So when we get a new leader, we've got to be the opposition that people want us to be. That's what we should be in a parliamentary democracy. I think that's what people are crying out for. So that, I mean, even if you support this government, if you want, say, for example, immigration reform, and I think a lot of people wanted that yesterday, we should have an opposition who comes in and says, look, you may have wanted this, but it's a bit of a con, you know, because we are going to forensically look at this. Now, that's not being, you know, the Lib Dems or whatever you want to characterise it. It's being a good opposition. And unfortunately, we're going to have to go on that path as a good Labour Party opposition. And I think that's an ambition that we have to accept. But also we've got to reform and have the ambition to be the next government. That's going to be a long and tough road, by the way. And, you know, if former leaders of the party are saying that, then, you know, that is fair.
And that's all part of the narrative then, isn't it? So you should listen to any number of people and then decide which way you want to go. But the problem is it seems to be taking an eternity. And if you are going to be the opposition, you should be being it now, surely.
Yeah, but I mean, give us a chance. I mean, we've got leadership.
Well, we're nearly in March already. The election was on the 12th of December.
Yeah, it feels a bit endless.
I mean, it really does, and we're not even there yet.
It's kind of, and it's got that kind of feel to it. Fair enough. I mean, you know. Look, it's going to end in April. We're going to have the leader. You know, it's.
Who's your choice for that?
We had nomination rights as MEPs before we left the European Union, and I nominated Keir Starmer. So he's ahead. And
what his policy is on immigration?
Yeah, I mean, I think you know, when he was asked about it, I accept that it wasn't a fully formed answer. I get that, but I am really convinced. By the way, their analysis of what happened yesterday was pretty fully formed, that it was more tabloid fodder than...
Yeah, but that's just what I'm saying. It's easy to criticise. It's easy to criticise, Claude, but there's nothing coming out which is an alternative. That's the point.
No, but look, give him a chance. I mean, he's going to be leaving in April, and...
OK, we'll wait till then, shall we?
One thing I'd say about Keir Starmer is that he is forensic, he's an intelligent guy. I think he will be pretty clear that when it comes to migration and immigration, there is a clear need for a clear policy from Labour. You cannot just criticise what the Conservatives are doing on the point system and replacing free movement, which is the reality, without coming across with a comprehensive policy. He knows that, and we'll have to propose that after April, and he knows that. And I think I think he'll surprise people. I think he will make that transition. I'm pretty confident If he wins, of course.
Okay. And how's life for you after the European experience and the, the loss of the MEP-ship?
It's slightly surreal because one of the things is that we've lost our representation over there. I was in Brussels yesterday. I was doing some meetings with the Party of European Socialists for Stimnat. And we've lost our representation, but we really aren't out of the EU yet. We'll be out in 2020. That's when we're a third country, as it were. You'll see that the differences, you know, economically, we'll be a third country in terms of our borders and all the rest of it. So it does feel a bit surreal because we're kind of the only difference that the MEP, the Commissioner and so on have gone. So it does feel a bit odd. And we're kind of, everyone kind of points at us as the difference.
You're not doing that thing where you tell the wife that you're still going to work even though the job's gone.
Oh, yeah, it's sort of the kind of, you kind of sound.
I'll see you at the end of the week.
Yeah, and it was a little bit like that yesterday. I was in Brussels for this sort of meeting, and it was a little bit like, going to work. And, a little bit like that. But I've tried and not get into the old patterns. You know,
no, of course. I mean, it must be tough, though. But thank you. Listen, Claude, got to run. Claude Moray's there talking about Tony Blair, the future of the Labour Party.
Online, on DAB, and on the Talk Radio app. Talk Radio.
We're about to talk to Nadeem Zahawi, who's the Life Sciences Minister, because there's another new announcement today, £10 million boost for industry and researchers to improve patient care through new technologies. Nadeem, very good morning to you.
Good morning.
Thanks very much indeed for joining us. Tell us what this is aimed at and what you expect it to do.
Yes, the life science industry is a £75 billion a year industry now in the UK, employing 250,000 people. So this is one of the sectors where we now have relative advantage in the same way that we have in financial services and some other sectors that are beginning to develop in the UK. So what we're doing today is through UK research and innovation, we're piloting a £10 million scholars innovation scholars scheme, where if you are an academic at a university doing some fantastic research into dementia or into cancers, you can be seconded to a brilliant startup or a more established business or a third sector. Many charities work in this area as well of research, and you can work within that. And effectively, UK research and innovation will pay for that. So the £10 million will go towards that. And you can apply for this money up to £300,000 per secondee, effectively. It's a really important time in life sciences in the UK because of the brilliant scientists who helped us sequence the genome, for example. We now have an ecosystem in the United Kingdom that is simply growing and is challenging in terms of its leadership in the world, and we're backing it even further. We're also announcing six opportunity areas, opportunity zones, life science opportunity zones in Hertfordshire and in Oxford and Cambridge and Kent in Wiltshire and in Birmingham. That is clusters of academic scientists, businesses, all working together, researchers, to develop the what the NHS really needs, which is cures for cancers, dealing with dementia, and how we ultimately get to a cure for that debilitating, horrific disease. So lots of really important work. And I want to make sure that we back it by allowing that interaction to get deeper between academia and, of course, startups and business.
And there's something called the Global Talent Route. Is that so? Is this done sort of in conjunction with some of the announcements made yesterday by Priti Patel about the immigration point system?
Yes. Yeah, so today, Priti Patel and the science minister and the immigration minister will be hosting a reception at number 10. For the Global Talent Route, which is basically a fast-track route of allowing people from around the world, the best and the brightest researchers, doing all sorts of research, not just obviously in life science, to be able to come to the UK and be able to settle here and do their work here in our great universities.
Okay. So, I mean, are you competing now as an individual country with Europe, with America, with China, with, Japan? What's the sort of scenario that you hope to see?
We always have done, and we have had fantastic results. If you look at what people have done in, for example, the ability to sequence the genome has allowed us to spawn companies that are now, you know, world beaters. Selexa being one of those. It was bought by Illumina, which is the American side. It's now $100 billion business. And also some of our more traditional life science businesses, you know, like AstraZeneca and GSK, who are doing incredible work in this area as well. So it's a combination of bringing back and bringing together the brilliant scientists, brilliant innovators, some startups, some larger businesses, creating those clusters where you get critical mass. So if you're a scientist anywhere in the world, you think, well, actually, you know what? I'll actually move to that area because I'll work on this project for the next 3 years. And if it works, all well and good. If it doesn't, there'll always be other jobs for me in this area, because we now employ 250,000 people in life sciences in the UK.
And I see Priti Patel's managed to get herself into the papers this morning for a reason other than the immigration points plan. Apparently she's a bit of a bully in the Home Office.
I've known Priti Patel for 25 years. Priti Patel is no bully. She's a team player. She's focused on delivering what the Prime Minister has quite rightly tasked us all to do, is to take back control of our borders, deliver an immigration system that can flex to the needs of the economy, the points-based system that she announced yesterday. And she's doing a great job. I just think, you know, some of this stuff, I haven't seen the particular article you referred to because I've been doing the media round this morning, but some of this stuff is I think, you know, we ought to just focus on the job in hand, which is delivering for the British economy, levelling up opportunity throughout the whole country to make sure that all those people who lent us their vote, as the Prime Minister constantly reminds us, we really deliver for.
People up in Yorkshire are not too happy. In fact, one Conservative MP, Craig Whittaker, who's the MP for Calder Valley, has said that there were 1,200 homes flooded by Storm Ciara last week in his constituency. He says the government have been very slow at approving emergency relief funds. And this comes off the back, I suppose, of people wondering why Boris Johnson hasn't been seen out and about, you know, talking to flood victims.
Well, Boris Johnson is focused on making sure that his ministers, I'm the business and industry minister, and I just want to say, reassure Craig Whittaker and the people of the Calder Valley that we are getting the money to the businesses that are affected, that are impacted, £2,500 compensation per business, as well as the... Well, we're out the door as we speak. We did it. You know, we were working
on it. Well,
they
got it now.
48 hours. Absolutely. Businesses are getting the money as we speak, as well as individuals, £500 per home impacted, as well as making sure that whether it's Robert Jendrick at the Department for Communities and Local Government is focusing on making sure he operationalised the Bellwin scheme to get that £500 to those impacted families, myself in the Department for Business to get the £2,500 to businesses impacted. George Eustace, the Secretary of State for the Environment, is leading on this. What would you, your listeners prefer? Actually, a Prime Minister who focuses his ministerial team on delivery and getting the money out of the door, or a sort of a media jamboree for a photo opportunity?
They'd probably like something in between, where at least he could have said something in which he said that you know, he was doing all that he could to help them as fast as he possibly could, and he wasn't then going to be criticised by one of his own MPs, probably.
Well, I think Craig Whittaker was critical. I heard some of his comment about ministers working together. I can reassure him that we are all working together. You know, there's 1,000 people from the Environment Agency that are working night and day to make sure they help those people. You know, a single home being impacted is one too many. In this current flooding, 20,000 homes have been actually protected by the investment we've made, $2.6 billion, to protect 300,000 homes. We've committed another $4 billion in our manifesto, which you'll see coming through as well. And I just want to reassure Craig and others, there's 1,000 people working night and day, as well as on top of that, the emergency services, to make sure that we help people that have been impacted, as well as get the money out of the door, which is what Craig was quite rightly you know, challenging us to make sure we do.
OK. Nadeem, thanks very much indeed. Nadeem Zahawi, Life Sciences Minister there, talking about the money going to people who have suffered in the floods. If you're in one of those areas where you are expecting money from the government, I'd love to hear from you as to whether you've got it. Because apparently, as we speak, according to the Life Sciences Minister, you're getting the money.
Across the UK, online, on DAB and on your smart speaker, Talk Radio.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online.
Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
My Toosie joins me now, though, my favourite conservative YouTuber. Maya, very good morning to you. Welcome.
Good morning. Thanks for having
me. Fresh from your trip to America, where you were over there sort of helping the Democrats file themselves further and further away from the White House, right?
It was a fact-fighting mission to find out if the Democrats are more crazy or Labour.
And what did you decide?
They're kind of competing well against each other.
Funnily enough, we were talking just before you got here about how the Democrats have kind of decided to eat themselves very much in public. And Mike Bloomberg is there as a sort of slightly...
mini Mike.
mini Mike. Slightly strange individual who thinks that by spending bucket loads of money to appeal to people on the left, that he's going to get himself elected in parts of America where they just won't elect him.
Now, he's trying to copy what Trump... or has been doing, which is kind of basically attack on a personal level. It doesn't really work if it's not part of your character. He's been like, you know, attacking Trump or everybody else or now Bernie.
Yeah,
it's just not in his character, so it's a bit weird.
And also, he wasn't helped, was he, at the start of his kind of his most recent campaign, when he issued a dictum, or it was said that he issued a dictum to Bloomberg, the news company, to not write bad things about either him or any of the other candidates that he liked.
Yeah, I mean, it's just the mismanagement of all these campaigns, and I've been talking to a lot of people in America about this. There are some people who say actually Bloomberg could become the nominee. On the other hand, Bernie could still get it. But they're very two different people. I don't understand how this party works.
I know. Well, that's the problem, isn't it? Because there is such a vast and different organisation. I mean, my sister lives in New York, works in New York, lives in Connecticut as well. She's very much part of that sort of centrist Democrat kind of relatively well-off band of people, you know, who would have voted for Bill Clinton, who would have voted for Barack Obama, but who would find it quite difficult to vote for probably Bernie Sanders. And whenever I talk to her, she says, you know, they've kind of lost their minds. They've gone way far left of most of middle America. Yep. And like all things, you cannot get elected to the White House if you don't get middle America.
And not just that, I was massively surprised to find out in New York that I thought here with the Labour Party we have problems with anti-Semitism.
Yeah,
I know there are obviously always people on the left who have issues, kind of certain people, but there are a lot of people in the Democrats who are anti-Semites.
Really?
But no one really talks about it
that
here.
That is surprising, yeah.
Yeah, I was surprised because, you know, our mainstream media don't really talk about that sort of stuff because it's probably not in our interest to know.
No. And also it's probably a slightly more complicated situation as well. It's not as straightforward as it is here. Of course, here, you probably will be aware you didn't miss much. You know, the Labour Party bandwagon continues to roll on. I watched a bit of the Channel 4 debate the other night and was laughing about their complete and utter inability to not only not say the two words Tony Blair, but to not even actually acknowledge his existence. I was saying to Michael Walker there from Navarra Media, why not say, if you're Keir Starmer or Rebecca Long-Bailey, look, obviously everybody knows that Tony Blair was a very successful Prime Minister for the Labour Party, but one of the reasons I would never nominate him is because of this. Instead of which, it's this awkward kind of shuffling of feet and pretending that he didn't ever actually run the country.
Not just that, this is their time. They don't have to go complete Blairite again, but some sort of new reform. But we've discovered that the four candidates, well, now three, Lisa Nandy and Keir Starmer, who kept saying we're not really far left, they're now coming up with the same policies as Jeremy Corbyn.
Yeah.
So they're just basically Jeremy Corbyn, but not...
Well, she was asked whether she would change any of the policies that were in the Labour mm-hmm. Party manifesto for the last election, and she couldn't think of one.
And she wants to abolish the monarchy.
Yeah. Yeah, well, actually, did she not say she'd quite like to see Queen Meghan in place of the current Queen? But it's a very bizarre thing that they're doing because, again, they're kind of irrelevant. Mm-hmm. Tony Blair's making a speech today, which many of them don't want to hear.
No.
And yet he's going to be advising them that if they don't absolutely reform, they mm-hmm. are out of power for probably 10 years. He's probably right, isn't he?
Yeah, he's right. I mean, firstly, the more he speaks, the more he's going to help the Tories. Because the more he's going to alienate
the Labour. Secret agent. Yeah, exactly. Not so secret.
Well, yeah. But he's right that the party needs reform. But his problem is he thinks the party has to go back to 1997. Mm. The 1997 Blairism was right for the time. But now you kind of, with the shake-up, with the kind of anti-establishment movement mentality across the West, you kind of need positive populism, basically, yeah. good populism.
Yeah.
And so that if Labour go towards that way, which is, again, that means they have to support Brexit and everything else, yes. then they could win.
Could they invent perhaps the new thing? I've just thought of it. It could be kind populism. Kind. Because, you know, we've all been told to be kind.
We tried that in 2015, kind of gentler politics.
Yeah. It's not working very well, is it? Because, I mean, funnily enough, one of the reasons we wanted to talk about stuff today is because of this Ofcom move. Mm-hmm. It's a sort of power grab, if you like, which was announced a week or so ago, that they want to not only now regulate broadcast media. Mm-hmm. They also want to go into social media and they want to even go into possibly YouTube. Now, you've just celebrated 100,000 subscribers.
Yep.
Congratulations. It's probably 200,000 by now.
It's 122 now.
It's 122. Well done. Amazing. It's a great YouTube channel, by the way. But what does it exactly mean if Ofcom start regulating it? Because you've told me in the past that there's already a kind of quite reasonable way of regulating what goes out on YouTube. Lots of people who have been considered to be unpalatable have had their accounts cancelled, had their accounts demonetized. So what would Ofcom do?
YouTube are already very strict, up to a point where it's kind of like difficult to actually be on YouTube already. Ofcom, the problem with Ofcom, even with the mainstream broadcast kind of game, because it's too big and it's difficult to manage, what they do is they come up with these blanket policies.
Yeah.
And it just applies to everything and everyone at any time. Mm. And they're going to do the same, for example, with YouTube or other areas, blogs, where you can't, because YouTube are still doing the same thing, blanket policies, where you can't say certain words, otherwise it would trigger and your video will be demonetized or your channel will be deleted. Whereas if they actually listen to the context, they'll actually realize you didn't say anything bad. But you can't do that because you can't have the manpower to people sitting in the office watching and reading everything.
Well, I mean, you can't imagine Ofcom having enough people to do that either. So,
no, of course not.
Would they be able to influence YouTube and say, we need you to do this? Because I think the problem for a lot of social media companies is that they're not based here. Mm-hmm. They are based in America, largely, where freedom of speech is actually a thing.
Yep.
And people can say things that you can't say here, albeit that they might be horrible. So I don't really see how it would work.
Yeah, I think with YouTube, they could make it work because it's kind of based on regions or countries.
Yes.
So the UK YouTube, so if you're watching it from the UK account, it will be hit.
Okay.
But if you're actually watching it from the American account, it could be open.
Would it be based upon, you know, their kind of sense of what they now regard as balance, for example, on radio and in television? Because I don't think they could do that.
No, they can't. They can't really force my channel, for example, to force me to like bring someone from the left and from the right and they'll be like, now you have balance.
Yes.
I think they're just going to go with sensitivity in the name of hate speech laws and all that. And that's going to be a big problem. But at the end, all it is, it's a cartel. And it's to defend their own monopolies. The BBC, now the advocates for the BBC have been coming out for the past couple of weeks because of the news that we might actually abolish the license fee. And the BBC, the people who love the BBC, the whole concept, is that they don't realise the BBC are actually damaging even local and regional papers and radio
Absolutely.
Stations because they're all like a small, good local radio station.
We talked about this the other day. They have 61 radio stations
Why?
The BBC.
What's
the point? They don't need 61 radio stations. And all of those local stations are strangling the ability of any commercial operation to run a commercial station, and they shouldn't be doing it.
No, absolutely not. And it makes sense. And this is what the whole cartel of there are certain people, the kind of very, very authoritarian leaning people in the country, in the West, who want to centralize everything, including the media, so that they could control it and they could control the narrative. And then, as we've seen, for example, Ofcom has no problem with the broadcasters not reporting on what's happening in France or in Iran. What's happening? No one's really talking about them. The BBC or Sky, when was the last time we heard about what's happening in Paris?
Yes.
But if the reverse happens, they will literally clamp down on YouTubers and bloggers and stuff.
Exactly right. And what about this whole business of, censorship vis-a-vis, sensitivity? Because you've got the people saying be kind after the whole Caroline Flack thing happened at the weekend. You know, Twitter doesn't seem to me to have become any kinder.
No.
You know, I've had people argue with each other about the Dave appearance at the Brit Awards who called the Prime Minister a racist two nights ago. They're still arguing about it after I put a tweet out sort of, you know, saying what would it have been like if somebody had written a song called White, which was all about how great it was to be white. I'd be very surprised if they got a Brit for it. You know, I just don't think it would have happened. And, you know, so you can say some things and be banned on Twitter, and you can say some other things which is just as horrible, but not be banned.
It's funny, when this Dave person, who I had no idea who he was, calling Boris Johnson racist is like calling the ocean dry.
Yeah.
And it makes absolutely no sense. That's one problem. The second problem...
Technically, it's a libelous statement as well.
Well,
isn't it?
Technically it is. I don't know, because you have to prove, it's kind of difficult. And the issue is... It's not just the celebrities, it's everybody. Like, I don't know if people have seen the news that the NHS staff can now refuse treatment, to give treatment to patients if they feel that that patient is being racist or sexist. Mm. Again, that's another problem.
Yeah.
So you're going to have a situation where...
So it's not
so
much universal healthcare for all as universal healthcare for everyone.
Exactly. So, for example, if Marc Francois gets ill and goes to the A&E and then some nurse... is a Remainer, said, well, Marc Francois is a Brexiter, so he's a racist.
What about a murderer who tries to hang himself in prison? Would they refuse to treat him on the grounds that he's a murderer?
Well, yeah, exactly. So, but what about, you know, because this is going to hit certain groups if it happens. Again, Brexiteers, for example, because they're automatically racist.
Yes, of course.
And, but what about, you know, for example, you know, certain other groups, extremists from the Islamist extremists or others, when they go to A&E,
right?
I'm pretty sure they're still going to be treated.
Of course they are. It's absolutely incredible. We're with Maya Toosey. He's talking to us about a great many things.
Talk Radio Breakfast with Mike Graham, in for Julia Hartley Brewer and The Times. Be well informed.
Welcome back to Talk Radio. This is, of course, Mike Graham in for Julia Hartley Brewer. Don't forget, you can now watch us as well as listening to us. So for your delectation, you can now tune into YouTube. You can get us on Facebook. You can get us on Twitter. And you can watch the show live as well. It's streaming right now as we speak, all the way up until 10 o'clock. I'm with Michael Walker, journalist at Navarra Media, Andy Sylvester, deputy editor of City AM. Michael, we've spoken about the Tony Blair speech a lot this morning. Claude Moray's there saying, you know, well, so what? Who cares about what Tony Blair has to say? But he didn't have any great ideas as to where the Labour Party should be going, particularly.
Yeah, I mean, well obviously, yeah, Tony Blair, he's giving a speech. He won free election, sure, let's listen to his advice. We can take it or leave it. I'd personally be inclined probably to leave more of it than I would take.
Yeah.
In terms of the direction the Labour Party is going to take, I mean, there is a difficulty here, really, because especially you're talking about the migration policy. Because Labour went into the last election with a policy which was they want, well, either to stay within the EU or have a fairly soft Brexit.
Yeah.
And that fairly soft Brexit would have kept something a bit like freedom of movement. You know, it would have been somewhat reformed, but you would have a fundamentally different immigration policy to that which the Conservative Party is suggesting. Now, the Labour Party could say, well, we still support something along the lines of freedom of movement. And I think they'd be, you know, I think it'd be perfectly coherent to do that, to say we're not going to vote
through. Well, it would be a position, at least, which they don't seem to have on it.
But I suppose the problem for them then is that, given that this policy is going to pass in a form that looks quite similar to, you know, there is going to be a points-based system by 2024. Labour don't really want to go into that election saying we're going to go back to the previous system. So I think it is understandable, at least, that they would take their time to work out how do they respond to this new political reality.
And their big problem, of course, is that many of their former traditional supporters have actually voted for Brexit on the basis that they want reform of the immigration system. So they have to, you know, they can't really say that, but they kind of know that that's the elephant in the room.
Yeah, it was interesting hearing Claude there talk about the immigration policy being tabloid fodder and populist. There was a snap YouGov poll yesterday, which, you know, particularly one of the things that was setting Twitter off, as Twitter is often regularly set off, was about the English language requirements. And yeah, there are, you can make arguments either way. I personally think, you know, the idea that you have to be fluent upon arriving at Heathrow in order to get a visa strikes me as a little bit
bizarre. There's plenty of people born here who are English who are not fluent.
I'm from Croydon, so yeah. I mean, you know, and there are elements to that, and you can argue the toss either way about where that level will be set. But the British public, according to YouGov, has said, if you come here, you need to be able to speak English. And Twitter's losing its mind about these elements here, But the British public is seeing what Boris is doing, setting the facts on the ground. And Labour need to respond to that pretty quickly.
Yeah, I think so. Let's talk some more about Harry and Meghan. Graham Smith is here. He's the CEO of Republic, which by its very nature, you would suggest, means that he's not a big fan of the royal family. Graham, very good morning to you.
Yeah, good morning.
Thanks very much for joining us. This was an inevitable decision that would have to be made about Harry and Meghan basically being told you cannot use the name Sussex Royal. They will apparently lose all of their privileges at Buckingham Palace. Do you think, as I do, that this is in some way going to sort of weaken the royal family at some point?
I think they have been weakened by this whole episode. I think the Sussex Royal thing is a trivial sideshow, really. I mean, they're still HRHs, even though they've been told not to use them. They're still Duke and Duchess of Sussex, and will continue to use that title. And those are public offices, really. I mean, they're going to be using those for private profit now. So I think there's still questions to be asked, which are a little bit more serious than whether or not they can use the word royal. It's a bit odd that a royal can't use the word royal, but a pub can. So,
that's quite a good point. I suppose that the pub isn't necessarily profiting off the name of the royal.
Well, I don't know, but I mean,
I don't go to a pub because it's got royal in the name.
No, indeed, but I do think that this is going to cause them a lot of problems for two reasons. Firstly, they've lost two of their sort of star names, as it were. And they're still going to be over there in North America as a constant reminder, that the monarchy isn't all that good for the royals themselves. They don't necessarily enjoy all that hassle of doing those engagements and so on. As a kind of a comparison with what the people that have been left behind. Mm. And with the Queen stepping back increasingly, I mean, she's 94 in April, and there's a good chance we're going to have King Charles on the throne this decade. They've been reduced to Charles and Camilla, William and Kate, and I think that
and a bit of Princess Anne.
Well, I mean, I think most people are younger than me, and I'm 45. Don't really know the rest of them that well.
No.
I mean, they've been pretty much in the background for a long time, and they were talking about even getting Prince Edward back on the front line. I mean, that's pretty desperate if they're going to have to rely on him.
You haven't mentioned Andrew yet.
This is the other thing, though. I mean, aside from losing Harry and Meghan, they've got this constant thorn in their side of Andrew, which is not going away.
Yeah.
They've got, the Queen is has not let up on supporting Andrew, being seen with him and all the rest of it. And I just think that, the shine is gone. The notion that everybody is fascinating with them and loves them, I think, is coming off. And I think that the reaction to Meghan and Harry's decision was pretty telling as well. A lot of people hostile to the idea of them spending our money, even though people were sympathetic to them going. And I said at the time, had they said, look, we're going because we don't want to do this anymore, we will now renounce our HRH titles, our Duke and Duchess titles, and we will start spending our own money on our own security and our own travel as of now, I think everyone would have been pretty happy for them. Fine, good luck, see you later. But they were trying to have their cake and eat it.
And it hasn't been handled terribly well by anyone, really. I mean, I think the Queen's actually had to put up with quite a lot of nonsense over the last year or so, and I think she's come out of it okay. But as I was saying earlier to my guests here, it's very difficult to see how there will be a great deal of public confidence once she's no longer at the head of the royal family.
Well, I think the problem is that, I think that the Queen's children, that generation, had all sorts of problems in the late 80s and 90s, and they haven't really lived up to the same sorts of standards that people perceive the Queen to have.
Yeah.
And they thought that the next generation, Harry and William, was going to be the sort of the salvation, and that is also not really working out. And I think that, the Queen still remains the only person who people have respect for. Rightly or wrongly, I mean, I have my own views on her record as head of state, but I mean, for whatever reason, she's been there for a very long time, and for the first sort of 50-odd years of her life, we were a completely different country in terms of our deference and our unwillingness to...
And it has kind of reformed a bit, the royal family, hasn't it? But it's difficult to see it reforming as much as it needs to, really.
I mean, the reforms have been pretty superficial. I mean, there's not an awful lot that's changed. I mean, it's largely the same organisation that it was. In certain aspects, it's worse in terms of the way the funding works and so on. It's incredibly secretive. And And they do routinely use public money for their own private purposes. And then we see people like Prince Charles, you know, taking a helicopter for a short flight to go and lecture scientists on the need to reduce flying to save the environment. And I think that all this kind of stuff is where people are going to get lose their patience, and they don't see it with the Queen. They don't really mind, and to some extent that's no longer an issue because, you know, I don't want to be morbid, but I mean, you know, she's not going to be around for all that much longer. Mm. And the attention is going to increasingly turn to what's next. I mean, we've just recently relaunched a new documentary called The Man Who Shouldn't Be King, and that looks at Charles as Duke of Cornwall and the way in which he deals with or operates the duchy as a private corporation.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've often said, I mean, it seems to me there's no excuse whatsoever in this day and age that the Duchy of Cornwall does not pay corporation tax. You know, it is a profit-making organisation. To all intents and purposes, it is a corporation. Yeah. Why the hell can't he pay a corporation tax like the rest of us?
Indeed. I mean, it operates like a private corporation. And they keep on saying, you know, depending on what the question is, they say, oh, well, you know, it's not a corporation, it's a trust, or it's a...
Yeah,
no,
because he says it is.
Between him and Charles, or... You know,
and he volunteers to pay tax. I said, well, how about it look if I rang up HMRC tomorrow and said, you know what, I've got this tax bill, but I'm going to voluntarily pay you 20% of it. How's that?
But the reality of the answer is it's not a private estate either. It belongs to the Crown. So, yeah. I mean, really, it shouldn't be his at all. And this is one of the arguments, is that it should really be rolled into the Crown estates and all the profits go to the Treasury.
Yeah.
And but you know, we in our film, we've interviewed tenants of the duchy who... are pretty angry with him in the way in which he treats them.
Yeah.
And quite a few of them we tried to interview and they were terrified of the consequences.
Well, it's very feudal, it seems to me, which is not entirely in keeping with the new century in which
we're
well,
that's exactly what people were saying. Yeah, yeah. This is run like a feudal fiefdom. And
okay. Is that out and about? Can people see that?
We're currently screening it on at events around the country.
Okay.
It will be widely available later in the year.
Okay, tremendous. Graham, thank you very much indeed for talking to us. Graham Smith there from Republic. I quite like to see that documentary because I think it's true. There is an awful lot of reform that is still required in the royal family if it is going to be in any way modernised.
Talk Radio. Across the UK. Online. On DAB. And on your smart speaker. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham. On Talk Radio.
If you enjoyed that, be sure to catch the whole show 10 to 1 Monday to Friday on Talk Radio via DAB online or via the Talk Radio app. And if you have an opinion on the stories we cover, we'd love to hear from you. Call us on 0344 499 1000 or tweet at Talk Radio during the show to have your say.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.